Chapter 6, No More Guessing.
When people offer a solution, it's usually couched in words that are meaningful to them. When someone uses words that fit smoothly into a sentence, it's easy to make the mistake of assuming that they have the same meaning for the word that you do. And that's not always true. They assume they know what they mean, you assume they know what they mean, and nobody really has a clue. When people are talking or sharing their ideas about solutions, they do it in what linguists call complex equivalents or high-level abstractions. What that really means is that people use words and phrases that encode a whole bunch of experiences or beliefs, and they just roll it up into one small package. It's like an iceberg. That word they're using, or that phrase, floats above the surface, and a whole bunch of meaning and different interpretations for it are way down below the surface. As a matter of fact, a professor named William Isaacs, who's an expert on dialogue, has written some great stuff about how we communicate. And he calls those iceberg exchanges abstraction wars. It's like a lot of conversations consist of one person or department flinging an abstract word or description at us, and then we act as if what they said is clear, that we actually get it, and then we throw one back. It's like we're playing conversational poker. I'll see your abstraction and I'll raise you one. The greatest enemy of our communication is the illusion that we are, in fact, communicating. Have you ever been to a meeting where everyone's nodding their head and they're all acting like they've got it, they get what's going on, they're with it, they're on board? And then later, as you compare notes from the meeting you were both in, it becomes apparent that you each walked away with a totally different understanding about what was going on. All the head nodding gave the illusion of progress, that everyone was on the same page. You may not even be in the same book, let alone the same page, because there isn't mutual understanding. There's just mutual head nodding. If you don't get shared understanding, you also don't get the results you want because your definition of success isn't shared. Your concept of success may not be the same as other functions or departments in your company, which by definition means that the standard you're thinking of for success is either exclusively yours, your team's, your department's, or yours personally, or it will be constantly shifting and changing as other people push back on it. Everyone will have their private, functional interpretation of what should be included in the definition of success, and you will get the results that may be good for your department, but can hurt other departments or the company as a whole. What's good for you isn't always good for the rest of the company. So when you're communicating, listen carefully to the key words or phrases someone uses, and then ask them what those words mean to them. It's astounding how often they will come back with something very useful and very different from what you expected. So instead of mutual mystification, we get mutual understanding. Of course, slowing down and getting mutual understanding isn't always easy. The more you guess, the more you're assuming, while at the same time, you're also validating your own assumptions and their assumptions. And the assumptions on both sides may be wrong. So slow down and listen. Don't blow past the words and start guessing.
There's another brand of guessing that we do that's
understanding. Of course, slowing down and getting mutual understanding isn't always easy. The more you guess, the more you're assuming, while at the same time, you're also validating your own assumptions and their assumptions. And the assumptions on both sides may be wrong. So slow down and listen. Don't blow past the words and start guessing.
There's another brand of guessing that we do that's particularly
always easy. The more you guess, the more you're assuming, while at the same time, you're also validating your own assumptions.
One assumption could be that it's even possible to solve the problem, or that the problem could be solved by only one solution. There's also an assumption that, hey, having the problem, for instance,
down and getting mutual understanding isn't always easy. The more you guess, the more you're assuming, while at the same time, you're also validating your own assumptions. ask them what those words mean to them. It's astounding how often they will come back with something very useful and very different from what you expected. So instead of mutual mystification, we get mutual understanding. Of course, slowing down and getting mutual understanding isn't always easy. The more you guess, the more you're assuming, while at the same time, you're also validating your own assumptions.
You have to guess about the answer. Well, rather than guess, and often about critical information, you need both the courage and the consideration to ask the question. For instance, someone on the executive team may say to you, "You should probably know that the budget amount for this project's very limited." Have you heard a response like, "Great, thanks for letting us know. That shouldn't be a problem because we really scrubbed this one down." And what hasn't been asked? What is the limited amount? The limited budget might possibly be more than you imagined it would be. So rather than ask, you go ahead and you guess about what the executive team's willing and able to spend. They guess about how much is going to be needed to be invested. And neither party usually finds out anything concrete until after both sides have spent too much time scoping the project, doing the research, and then sitting through a presentation or a proposal. And by then, if your guesses are far apart, and they probably will be, you may have wasted everyone's time.
And it's fascinating and unfortunately disheartening to watch people make presentations to the people who are making decisions that will affect them big time when the decision maker's criteria for actually making the decision is unknown to them. I remember one time I was working for a company and I was a new member of a product review board. Anyone in the company who had an idea for a product had to go in and present the business case. That wasn't the tradition in the company. It was just a new thing they were starting to do. And the business case didn't have to be complete. It just had to be roughed out enough to give this committee some kind of an idea. Well, I remember one particular meeting where someone with an idea, you know, was waiting his turn, and this board or this committee was behind schedule as usual, so he was being patient. And when it was his turn, he went and he handed out his business case to every committee member around the table and started going through every detail in the business case. Suddenly, one of the senior committee members, I think it was one of the co-chairs of this committee, stood up and said, "Everything here makes a good business case for us internally. But it seems like you've made a big assumption that clients even want this product in the first place. All of these numbers make perfect sense if, and I think it's a big if, clients want this stuff in the first place. And my question to you is, do they?" There was kind of a long pause. The guy making his case didn't know what to say, and then again tried to jump right back into the numbers and defend the case he brought to the committee, and the numbers were the stuff that he'd already used. And what he was really missing was the fact that he had made an assumption that the market would want it, and another assumption that he understood the decision-making criteria of this board. Maybe he did. But if he did, he didn't use it, from what I could tell. And either way, what the committee was interested in first and foremost was market need, not profitability, not project plans based on a bunch of guesses focused on internal efficiencies. And this guy was doing some major league guessing. In his defense, he was typical in an organization of a whole bunch of guessers who were making their first attempts to kind of course correct this thing and turn it around and start making better business decisions. I talked to him after the meeting and he kind of said to me in a quiet voice, "Man, I guess next time I need to wear a bulletproof vest." I mean, I felt for the guy. It didn't seem fair that he was being held to a standard that wasn't applied to everyone else. But he also wouldn't have needed the vest if he would have done his business thinking, tested his assumptions along the way, knew what people expected, and then be prepared for it. So one of the messages here is, don't wait for company policy or a standard operating procedure to force you to business think. You set the standard. For some reason, it seems like people try to get buy-in on a project or approval of a solution by presenting the criteria that would make the most sense to them, rather than finding out what would make the most sense to the people who will actually allocate the funds, who will be affected by the solution. So please, please, I beg you, never make a presentation or a proposal to people whose criteria for judging you or your presentation or your idea or your solution are unknown to you. If you do that, it's a huge, gigantic guessing game. And in Business Think, we are trying to maintain a relationship of understanding, not guessing, not mystification. Now, just because understanding is mutual and you're not making assumptions, that doesn't mean that the proposed event will actually qualify as a real solution. So you have to make another move to keep business thinking.